tell me a little bit about the tour you're on.
Yeah, definitely. Going to 20 cities in 30 days, celebrating the book, My Heart is an Idiot. It's my book of personal essays. It just came out in paperback last week. So going to a bunch of great cities around the country and some cities I've never been to share stories from the book with people. And also, it's a found magazine tour, too, in that I'm collecting new finds in every city and sharing some of my all-time favorite finds with people and some, you know, brand new ones that I've collected along the road.
Just based on your essays in your book, it seems like you've spent a really large percentage of your life on the road. is that true, or how much time have you spent on the road doing tours for Found and other projects?
I'd say, you know, a lot of the last 10 years I have spent on the road, and it's really fun. I mean, it's just an amazing chance to see friends that live in different cities and to make new friends. I mean, I'd never been to Fort Collins in my life and came here for the first time and met some incredible people last night, got into some really awesome conversations. And just one cool thing about the My Heart is an Idiot book is that it's so personal. It's me really revealing some pretty raw and intimate stories about myself. And so people have read it maybe, or they've, you know, heard me just read a couple stories from the book. And so they feel very open to sharing their own personal stories with me. And I love that. I love really digging in with people. I love being on the road. I feel like I could endlessly drive around the country and meet new people and be happy. Usually at some point I'm like ready to be home, but then after I'm home for a couple weeks, I'm kind of like ready to get back on the road.
Being on the road the way that writers have to make a living nowadays too. I mean, it seems like you can't really make it as a writer these days unless you are out there meeting people and, you know, basically getting to know your fans and having that sort of one-on-one connection.
It's a model I've stolen more from music, from so many of my friends who are musicians, and watching the way they would operate. You know, they would work really hard on recording a new album and try to make something really excellent and really special that they wanted to share with people. And then they'd be eager to get out on the road and, you know, they'd make 102 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, hop in a van, and hit the road for a month or 2 months or longer. And, yeah, I mean, there is something really important about making those personal connections. I mean, not just because it's so satisfying and meaningful. I mean, I've made friends in the last week that I believe I will stay in touch with for years and years, new people that have come into my life. And so there's great value in that. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. From a writer's perspective, I don't know. If you're trying to just make money, you're probably better served just staying at home and doing a lot of freelance gigs. For me, it's fun, and it does help. There's some value in making really deep personal connections. But for me, I think it's more fun than like idea that I'm going to go out and get paid.
So speaking of this incredibly revealing stories that you tell about yourself in the book, you know, you talk about having a long-term phone sex affair with somebody that you don't know who turns out to be a young gay man.
Yep.
You have this really intense story about basically stalking a phony literary agent and sending him bottles of your own urine. and I guess, you know, what is the line for you between revelation, the kind of revelation you have to make as a writer of personal essays, and outright embarrassment?
That's a really good question. Found Magazine, and we'll talk about it more, I'm sure, but you know, it collects people's personal notes and letters, and I've been publishing the magazine for 10 years and putting people's really private thoughts out into the world. Of course, we change the names and stuff like that, but I felt like it was only fair to share myself in the same way, to really open myself up. And ultimately, I love reading these kinds of personal essays myself because, you know, when somebody really reveals himself quite nakedly, even if they're revealing, you know, humiliating aspects about themselves, there's this flicker of recognition, and it's so meaningful when you see that, all right, I'm not the only one that thinks this crazy thought or does this crazy thing. And so I think I felt emboldened and actually written about that phone sex experience a few years ago, and then it was in GQ magazine, so, you know, read by a lot of people, and the response was, I was nervous about it, and it was, like, amazingly positive, and I think that emboldened me to try writing about other personal things, and honestly, the weird thing is, I wrote these essays in My Heart is an Idiot. I wrote them over the course of a few years, so the only person that was reading them during that time was my editor at FSG, the guy I was I was sending these essays to. And then, actually, I sent them to my mom, too. I would always send them to my mom. But I sort of forgot that other people would ever be reading these, because for so many years, they were just on my laptop. And so it has only been in the past year, you know, when the book first came out in hardcover, and, like, you know, just the first few weeks of the tour last fall, showing up at some of these venues and people coming up to me with this really funny expression on their face, and they'd kind of look at me and they'd say, I read your book and I know a lot about you. And I'd be like, oh my God, this is really weird. People do know a lot about me. But that said, you know, it did make people feel really open about sharing themselves with me and just telling me incredible personal stories themselves. And so I feel like, you know, the response has been positive. People have felt like, you know, have told me that these essays moved them and affected them in some way, and they related to them in some way. And that's, I think, what it's all about. You know, there's some universal aspect even into these pretty insane moments that I've shared.
There's this thread through the book that is a search for love. You know, you're sort of heartbroken throughout the book. But there's a strange thing, and I think it relates to Found Magazine too, because you seem to have the easiest time being intimate with strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, how do you think about that? How you make these incredible connections. You know, there's that, you pick up a guy on the side of the road who's hitchhiking to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's spent his entire life studying it, fantasizing about it, and he's never been there, and you get to be there with him.
Yeah.
In this moment where he pumps his fist in the air and he's crying because he's finally made it to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
After 35 years, and yet you can't seem to find love in this romantic way, but in this universal way you seem to find so much sort of gigantic big love.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's true, Dr. Phil, because the thing is, like, you kind of nailed it, because, I mean, it's easy to be really intimate with strangers, and, you know, the stakes are reduced in a way, you know, and there's not these other, you know, ongoing, enduring issues. You know, I talk about it in some of the essays in the book, In My Head Is an Idiot. I think I talk about, like, just how it's easy to almost fall in love with somebody at first sight, for example, and just believe this is the person for me, and, you know, maybe spend a night with them and think this is amazing. But you don't have to reach into those deeper issues that happen when you're in an actual relationship and those kinds of things that come up. So I just think sometimes it's easier to form connections with strangers than to deal with the real substantial issues that come up in a longer ongoing relationship, you know. But I don't think that makes even those fleeting and intense feelings of love you have for someone who's come into your life for a moment and may not be around much longer. I don't think that diminishes those or makes those, you know, not real.
I want to ask you about Found Magazine. I have this 2004 edition of the best lost, tossed, and forgotten items from around the world.
Yeah.
And I really love this when it came out. And I think about it a lot as technology has changed so much. There's been, obviously, you know, Found really came out of zine culture. And at that moment in 2004, 2005 was just when blogs began to sort of blow up.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that there's this big literary movement of, you know, either uncreative writing or conceptual writing, where people are just appropriating entire texts and recontextualizing them.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you were doing that, and you've managed to straddle from zines to the blog world. And I wonder, you know, what observations you've had about how those things have changed our culture along the way through Found Magazine.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm a print guy. I like holding a physical object in my hand. I like holding a magazine. I like holding a book. You know, that said, I spent a lot of time on the internet too. So, you know, so when we started Found Magazine, we started it as a print magazine, and this dude I used to play basketball with in Chicago at the time, he's like, man, this should be a website too. So fortunately, he had the foresight to create this website. Mostly it was just to post directions to this, like, release party we were having for the first issue. But we decided to throw a few finds up there. And, you know, the finds are incredible. They're these just really funny notes, these really beautiful notes. They really give you deep insight into other people's lives. But we started getting finds from all over the world because, you know, people weren't seeing the print magazine that we had, you know, made at Kinko's, a few hundred copies of it. They were seeing the website in Australia, in South Korea, in South Carolina, you know, and sending us finds. And so I have seen, as technology's changed, you know, these are most of the things in Found Magazine are these handwritten notes, handwritten letters. And so as technology changes, you have people writing these kinds of notes less and less. And yet there's new ways to find stuff. You know, people might print out an email and then lose that. And, you know, someone finds that blown down the street. People might send an email to the wrong email address. There was a guy who had a certain domain for his company, small business, and it was like neu.com. But anyone that was writing to anyone at, you know, neu.org or neu.edu, which was a university account somewhere, you know, he was getting like basically 20 emails a day meant for other people. And he sent us a selection of his best ones, and they were pretty incredible. People, text messages, you know, people have found a cell phone. And one woman in Baltimore told me she got her like 90-year-old dad a phone, his first cell phone. And when she powered it on, this stream of text messages started coming through. I guess whoever had previously had the same number. And so it's been really fun to see the new ways that people can find stuff, even as the technology evolves.
I wonder how you think about all of the found documents that you've collected. Like, I wonder, do you see it as, you know, to me, in a lot of ways, it reads like a giant sort of leaves of grass for our time. You know, it's like the voices of all these people. And, you know, you're obviously attached to that in this way that I think is very much, you know, the way that we think about things now, which is constantly pointing to other things. We're linking, we're doing this thing. And you kind of came out of zines saying, check this out, check this note out. I didn't write this, but I'm gathering them up. So how do you think about found as an entire collection?
Yeah, that's really true. That's a beautiful way to put it. Should I share a few just so that people get a sense for what these things sound like? I mean, just to give you an example of a couple, here's one. I always make these to-do lists myself. So I'm always interested when people send in found to-do lists. And there's one. It was just a one-item to-do list found in a casino in Vegas. It says, must win money. and then there's one. There was the first ever to-not-do list we ever received. Someone found this in Burlington, Vermont. It says, the to-not-do list, do not spend money on anything except clothing for Halloween, grocery items, Sarah's birthday dinner, sushi, metal show, or the movie Kill Bill. Save all other money. Do not eat junk. Any form of potato or corn chips, no Fritos, no Lay's, no Ruffles, no Cape Cod, nothing. Do not fall in love with any strangers. Do not procrastinate the trip to Japan. Do not start another tab at work. Do not fret over Wendy, or in any case, being alone. Do not borrow money from Mom. Do not eat out Oasis or any crap food place. Do not watch pornographic movies. Do not masturbate. Do not masturbate. And so, of course, that was my list, actually. No, it was found in Burlington, Vermont, where I suppose I left it. No, it really was just blown down the street there. There's those mysterious finds that you just make you wonder, you know, what does this even mean? In San Francisco, someone found this one that says, more buns, more cups, less lies. It's cryptic and bizarre. And then there's the really sad and touching ones. You know, this one came from Seattle. It's kind of in a kid's handwriting, and my friend found this one, actually. It says, dear Mommy and Daddy, I know it's hard for you to stop. I know you love me, but when you keep bringing that stuff in the house, it feels like you don't. I don't want to be rude, but I really want you to stop. Please, for me, Mommy and Daddy, don't bring it in the house. It makes a greater chance of us getting kicked out of here. I do get scared. Please, Mommy and Daddy, I love you. I just don't like when you do it. Love, Eliza. So the thing, I mean, if you can see it, it's like half a page, and it's, I counted the words, it's like 99 words in the thing, and it's so short, and yet it's so powerful, and you just get such a sense of this girl, this poor girl, who I imagine her parents bringing drugs into the house, and so it's just notes like that one that really move and affect me, and make me want to pick up every piece of paper I see blown down the street. And, yeah, I mean, every day we receive about 10 to 20 finds that have been sent in from around the country and around the world. And every day there's one that just completely blows my mind. It just makes me literally tear up, makes me laugh out loud. So it is fun. Yeah, like as you said, just to my mom calls it people watching on paper, which I think is a good way to put it. And another friend of mine said it was like Found Magazine is like reality TV but real, which I thought was also a funny way to put it. Because this is the most real you can get. It's completely unfiltered. people are being completely unselfconscious because they didn't expect anyone to ever read this stuff. They were just writing to a friend or writing to themselves. I feel like it's a privilege and an honor to have had a chance to glimpse so many people through these found notes. And if anything, I think that's what, to connect it to My Heart as an Idiot, to the book essays, I think the book, you know, the magazine's like glimpsing these people through a found note. And the book is like some of the actual strangers I met in my travels on the road and finding out what their real stories are.